Hello.
Welcome to Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're here to render judgment on the worlds of celebrity, pop culture, television, and fashion.
Strap yourselves in for some hardcore opinionating, darlings.
This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're Tom and Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your T-Lo, Tom Fitzgerald. I'm here with the Lou in your T-Lo, Lorenzo. My kids, my lovely husband.
Hello.
How are you, Lorenzo?
I'm
frigid.
It's been a very busy
December week.
And yeah.
It's always a busy week around these parts.
Frozen. It's finally here.
Yeah, it did get cold around our parts. Not the most eventful week, T-Lo wise, except for the editorial this week in The Enquirer, which was very fun.
I loved it. And I we'll talk about it, but I was very pleased and happy for you.
We spoke about
yes, we talked about
the tweet thread on World AIDS Day that I posted a couple of weeks ago and got shared a lot. And one of the editors of the opinion section, Erica Palan at The Enquirer, who we have dealt, you know, she hired us to write for the section once before. She reached out and said, I loved this thread. Would you mind expanding it? And she really didn't need it expanded by much. She was like, I would just take this as is, just,
right,
you know, tighten it up and bring it out to about 800 words. It was already like 600. And as I said to Lorenzo the other day, it's always a lesson learned that the stuff that takes me 15 minutes to write is always the stuff that gets the most, the biggest response, the most emotional responses, because that just came flowing out of me, that tweet thread. And then tying it together into an editorial literally took a half hour at most. Okay, not technically 15 minutes, but the whole thing was written in well under an hour. And the response has been great. It's been really, really great. It was very scary for me to do this because for the first time in my professional writing career, there was no Ann Lorenzo. Which was very weird. It was not Tom and Lorenzo. It was a personal essay about me and about my experiences. So it couldn't be Tom and Lorenzo. It was my byline. And then they sent a photographer over and it was my picture, which was extremely strange. We have sat for photographers, I don't know, a couple dozen times in the last 13 years since we started doing this.
Uh-huh.
And I'd never done it. I mean, Lorenzo was there. I mean, he was zhuzhing my outfit and making sure that there were, you know, he was there the whole time. But it was just weird that all the posing was me. So the whole thing was just a very interesting exercise for me professionally, and I suppose personally as well, to just stretch yourself. You know, it's been 13 years of writing about pop culture, reality television, red carpet fashion, you know, movies, TV, costumes, but not personal essays.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few personal essays on the site. And even the ones that are a little personal were still Tom and Lorenzo. So it was writing in a collective voice.
Right.
It can't be that personal when you're trying to sort of coordinate the thoughts of two different people and come out with product, which has been the challenge for 13 years in the writing. And I mean, I should add here that I will always want to continue working that way. I've never had a problem putting Lorenzo's name on the writing because he was always involved in it. The whole site, the voice, the perspective, everything is a Tom and Lorenzo perspective. The books, everything. But this time it was just me, and that was really kind of strange for me as a writer and scary, especially the personal aspects of it. I didn't have to, but I did tell my family members, who are all, most of whom are local and read that paper. But I told them, I was like, it's coming out, and it's a little personal. I kind of allude to how slutty I was in my 20s. right? So I was like, okay, so that's a little weird. But then, I mean, I looked over it once it was out and I realized it's really not that salacious, anything that I said, and it was not that. All I did was imply that I had a sex life.
Right. The great thing is the photographer, Michael. Hello, Michael. You're wonderful.
Yes.
Oh my God. Such a wonderful person. His wife follows us, reads us, and she loves us. Stephanie, I believe, right?
Yes.
Hi, Stephanie. Anyway, he was awesome. He took his time. We've had amazing experiences with photographer, but we had some very bad ones. too.
Especially when they come into your house.
Right. But he was so nice, talked to us, loved the cats and all that. And that just warms you up and makes you feel a little better about the picture, having your picture taken. And he was looking for spots and everything. And then he finally narrowed down, it was a place where your picture, a painting that your father made.
Right. I actually directed him to that spot. When he asked where I was comfortable and where I would like to be, I pointed to the yellow chair because I knew it was a really photogenic chair, and it was right by the window. And right above that chair is a portrait that my father painted of me when I was 10 years old. My father was a trained artist, but not a professional artist. He did other things professionally, but he was a very trained artist and very talented. And it's been my proud possession now for a little while. It's 40 years old. I'll say it. My dad passed away last month. I mentioned this on the site. So it was especially poignant to have the picture in the background.
Right.
My dad would have loved to have seen that in the paper, although his work did get more than its share of local acclaim and local shows, and his work hangs all over the Philadelphia area, actually. But it was just nice a month later to, as his son, to just have this little moment where he was being highlighted along with me. So the whole thing was very poignant, and the picture just happened to be, honestly, the best picture of me ever taken. Best picture
oh my God,
of me
it's
ever
a,
taken.
And he took several.
I am not
yeah.
remotely photogenic, not at all. I'm the type of person, when you point a camera on me, all of my facial muscles tighten up, and then I look like a crazy person or a lizard or, you know, an alien. I never look like myself. Literally every picture I look at, I'm like, that's not who I see in the mirror at all. That's never who I see in the mirror. And this was a picture I was like, there he is. That's the guy I see in the mirror. Why can't there be more pictures like
right,
that?
Right, right. He was, the photographer was great. Michael was great. Took a great picture. He took several. He showed them to us. And it was just nice. The colors are beautiful. The lighting is phenomenal. Everything about the picture is great. And the fact that the painting is behind you, it's just great, great. And the piece and all that. So it was great.
Piece was very personal. And the response to it was excellent.
Yes.
I was better than I could have imagined. And now I'm sort of, wondering if I should be doing a little bit more of this going forward. Not necessarily on our site, because I don't know if the site can handle a
right.
bunch of personal essays. I'm not sure that's really... I know, in fact, that that's not what I want our site to be.
But we can do more stuff.
But there's opportunities out there to do this sort of
yes.
thing. And with the book coming out soon, I definitely want to explore this side of my writing a bit more. It was actually inspired by the book. The entire thread and then the essay was inspired
right.
by the book, specifically the AIDS portions of the book and how emotional they were for me. I believe we talked about this in the previous
mm-hmm.
discussion about this. Anyway, moving on. To just talk about what we're going to talk about today. We are obviously doing another Project Runway recap. There are 40 million designers on the show, so we're at that stage early in the season where the recap portion is going to take over a huge chunk of this podcast. But we're going to put that off for a second because we wanted to talk about the goings-on in queer media this week. There was a huge shakeup and some people whose careers that we were very supportive of and who we were following had a bad week career-wise. And we want to talk a little bit about that, our thoughts mm-hmm. about queer media. I think we have a perspective because we're of an age where we can remember 25 years of queer media. We have been consumers of it. And also, we are queer writers who have this sort of peripheral outside the mainstream media job where we have to do a lot of the same things queer media does, but on a much smaller level and to a broader audience mm-hmm. than just queer people. But before we do that, this is another reason why I look so great in this picture in the Inquirer the other day, because thank you to the folks at Plexaderm who are sponsoring this portion of the podcast. We've been using some of their products in the last week or two. I used the under eye serum before the Plexaderm Rapid Reduction Serum. I'm sitting here holding it just before the photo session, and I've been using the cleaning pads and the daily moisturizer, but oh my God, the rapid reduction serum. You tried it too.
Yeah. I mean,
I actually put it on net just before we turned on the mics because I wanted to kind of feel it happening by the time it came to the library.
It tightens everything up.
It does. It tightens everything up, and it's great. It's like a temporary reaction. It doesn't do anything permanent, but it's perfect for situations like that. It is perfect where you're like, I'm going to be taking pictures all day. It's you know, I'm going to be in a wedding party. Or even right now where it's like the holidays and there's all these pictures, you know, family pictures, family videos, phone videos. One thing we learned on our first book tour is you're going to be out there and there's just going to be people pointing phones at you and you really don't get a chance pose. And situations like that can be very, very stressful when you're thinking. So products like this are perfect for me. That'll tighten me up just in time for pictures.
I was just about to say,
make my skin glow. Go ahead. You've been using it.
I like it when you still look normal, like a normal person.
Oh, exactly.
I like a little help, but I don't want to feel like, you know, somebody painted my face, literally.
No, of course not.
I just hate, I mean, we see that a lot, especially during Fashion Week. Everyone is so made up. And you can see from my way that they're wearing everything, but their natural face. So I don't like that. I do. That's why I love these products, because they give you exactly the amount you need and you feel great. And they work. Really work.
Plexiderm uses silicate minerals from shale clay to form a temporary tightening layer on your skin. I can feel it happening to me as we speak. This invisible layer works to visibly tighten and lift crow's feet and wrinkles surrounding your eyes in minutes. Here to tell you, Estilo, you listen to us. I'm telling you, it actually does work.
Right.
Plexiderm smooth skin surrounding under eye bags, making them shrink from view in minutes. While the results of Plexiderm are not permanent, we know you'll love the way you look after your very first use. And like I said, they have the hyaluronic, I never know if I'm pronouncing it right, acid reset and replenish pads and the daily moisturizer. We've been using all three products. Mm-hmm. I am super sensitive to things like
your skin really is.
Like a hyaluronic acid pad, a lot of times I'm like, oh, I won't be using that because it'll turn my skin bright red, but it doesn't. It doesn't. I mean, their products have been very soothing to me, and they work. What can I say? They work. Like I said, if it's the holidays and you got a lot of pictures coming ahead of you and
Just want to look great. You know, like for those moments where you don't have a lot of time to put a lot of makeup maybe or whatever, you just put that on and then your skin looks
plus,
fresh.
I mean, it and has the skin freshening products
Clean Pads, exactly.
So you should get Plexiderm's holiday promotion. Go to tryplexiderm.com and use our code TILO for 50% off plus an additional $10 off. That's right, 50% off plus an extra $10 off. This offer is also available by calling 1-800-685-1292 and mentioning code TILO. That's 1-800-685-1292. Mention code TILO or go to tryplexiderm.com. That's TryPlexaderm.com and use code TILO for 50% off plus an additional 10% off. Plexiderm is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit TryPlexiderm.com today and use code TILO at checkout. That's TryPlexiderm.com. Tighten up those eye bags, people. Right. The holidays are coming.
Before we start talking about these topics, I just remember, we also got an email today from our publisher with the approval to show the final cover. Yes.
I thought you were going to talk about that blurb, which we don't have approval for yet.
Now, we've only shown you guys the front cover. But there's people in the back, too.
Yes. Well, when the opportunity came for artwork to be put on the back cover and our editor said, hey, we could put some more people, you know, legendary people on the back cover. Right. Who do you want?
So we do have more people on the back.
Immediately. And we'll get into that later because we're putting a post up to show it to you
But
today.
Just letting you know that,
there's been a lot of book stuff in the works. We were talking to our publicist earlier this week. Plans for what we're doing down the road. There's going to be, book tour and appearances.
We're trying to get more cities and more places.
Yes.
So all of you wonderful people out there can...
In the dark.
Yes. can come see us.
That's the thing I always tell people, like people who want to be aspiring authors or anything like that. There is so much work involved in a book if you really want your book to be successful. That goes beyond writing it. It is a... truly, it has been a, well, I'm not going to say 2-year project, 18-month project.
It's fascinating
just getting it out the door, right. Getting all the publicity material done, the audio stuff done, marketing plans, and just everything about it. There's just so much more than just writing a book.
Right. I mean, there's so much that we didn't know. And it's nice to talk to people who know something about it. Like, we had friends and readers coming from D.C. to visiting Philadelphia. Remember, we have dinner with them.
Yes.
And one of them, what he does is publishes and helps publish cookbooks. And we had the whole conversation at the table having dinner about the industry and how it's different depending on what kind of writing you do.
Right,
and
right,
we
right.
He was talking about how it is when it comes to cookbooks. And, you know, it just it amazes me how much it's involved. Like, you know, so many people helping you to publish a book. It's not just sitting, typing, and writing, and then voila, you have a book.
Right. No, I agree. It's way more work. And there's no segue here, so we might as well just get straight to it. The editors of Out Magazine and The Advocate, the two leading LGBTQ magazines, Philip Picardi at Out and Zach Stafford at The Advocate, they're both owned by Pride Media, and both editors were let go this week in what a shakeup, let's say.
Also the CEO of Prime
Media. That has rocked the, you know, queer publishing world and has also opened up a lot of questions about the future of queer media, about what is going or went wrong with Out and The Advocate. And whether, you know, there's going to be a lot of finger pointing going forward. Philip Picardi is someone whose career we've been following very, very closely. He started out he was like this wunderkind. He still is. He's only like 28 years old. He's still very young. At Teen Vogue, he got brought on. He caught the eye of Anna Wintour, which is always a great thing for anybody in that line of work. And she sort of took him under her wing, and they launched the LGBTQ publishing side of Condé Nast, which included the site Them, which is, I'm pretty sure Philip just launched that site. That's kind of what made his name after Teen Vogue. And from there, he accepted the editor-in-chief job at Out Magazine. Now, Out and The Advocate both have long histories, long publishing histories that go back decades. And Lorenzo and I were talking before the mics went on about what we were planning to say about this and everything. And I said, look, I have been out of the closet for a quarter century and following queer media since before I came out of the closet. Because that's one of the great things about queer media is it does help people out. It does help people on that road to self-acceptance, because when you're in the closet and you're questioning who you are, the first thing you're going to do is reach for something that you can look at or read that will, you know, help you define yourself and help you realize that you're not alone or a freak. And queer media has always, always held that role. But in my long 3-decade exposure to queer gay media, LGBTQ media, queer media generally, it has always been struggling. It has been struggling for as long as I've known it. It is a genre of media that is, by its nature, appealing to a very, very small market of people and trying to stay afloat based off that demographic. I'm going to stop for a second and let you talk so we can trade back and forth. What are your thoughts?
I, again, same just like you, I've been reading these magazines for, I can't even remember how long, and I was always, I remember being very excited that those magazines existed, because, as you said, it was a sense of, you know, it's me out there in print.
Right, exactly.
It's my voice, it's representation, and all that is extremely important, because you feel like what you are is valid, it's been validated. It's not just you being you in your weird corner or basement. It's out there. It's you, who you are as a person, and so on. So I've always loved all that. But again, like you, I've watched them struggle financially to keep those magazines going. And you know, when it comes to magazines and publications and newspapers and all that, it all comes down to advertising. It's all about advertising.
All advertisement. Forms of media.
Yes, it's all about advertisement. If they don't have ads, then they can't pay the bills. And it's always been like this with things like queer representation in magazines and publications. I mean, most it has changed and has improved, but advertisers, meaning big companies, they're still not comfortable advertising in gay or queer publications. They just don't. And I was reading a lot of articles about this specifically and saying that because a lot of these publications are digital only or have a digital representation, one of the issues that the advertisers see and face is that people go to those sites, they read an article, and all these gay ads follow them through their browsers to other things they read and so on. And people who aren't necessarily queer but read queer stuff,
right,
sometimes feel uncomfortable that those ads are showing over and over again,
right,
after they left that specific site.
Right.
So that's an interesting point that I
never considered that. Until
I never
you pointed
considered that,
out that
until
me.
I read that, and I was like, "Oh, interesting."
There's a lot of issues with. There's always been issues of advertising, raising advertising dollars for queer media, and I'm old enough to remember when no one wanted to do it. No mm-hmm. advertisers wanted to do it, and then for the longest time, it was, reflecting sort of the status of. No, I'm not going to say that. For the longest time, the ads that I saw in queer media, and I think we're talking like in the 90s at this point, were alcohol ads and pharmaceutical ads.
Right.
So it was all about partying your pride away with Absolute Vodka or whatever, you know, Coors Light or whatever, and also HIV meds.
Your HIV medication. And listen.
And those were, and as far as my understanding was, both the alcohol companies and the pharmaceutical companies were major, major parts of the advertising budget for queer media for a
yes.
very, very long time. And then in this century, specifically in the last 10 years, things have gotten better. You do see more and more companies, but we actually wrote an editorial in the Inquirer in June about how companies will just paint a rainbow flag on something in during Pride Month, and that's the extent of their marketing or publicity. So there's a lot of surface. On the surface, it looks like, oh yeah, everyone's advertising gay now and gay dollars and all this stuff. But it's still a dicey situation.
Right.
There's not big money happening as when you compare it to other, say, specialty demographic media.
Right. I also read about many companies having floats during the parade, but they're not necessarily advertising.
Yeah, stuff like that.
In this publication. So you see them parading.
Sponsoring bar nights, but not magazine ads.
Not necessarily
ads.
Magazines and publications.
Right.
Anything that the people are actually reading and looking at on a daily basis. So that's very interesting. And the pharmaceutical industry is still the biggest, or if not the biggest, one of the or the biggest advertisers for that type of publication. And my understanding is that it depends on who the CEO is. And like, is that Gilead Pharmaceutical Company, I believe? Is that how you pronounce it? Anyway, now they have a different CEO, and this person now is not interested in advertising in queer publications anymore at the moment. So it comes and goes,
right,
in terms of where and how and when they can rely on something in terms of, you know, keeping the publication going.
And it should
and
also be
bills.
Noted that we are in a extremely volatile media market right now. Like so many media outlets, Pride Media was bought by a financing company, what's the company that owns it? Oh my God, I'm blanking on it. Anyway, these big money guys come in an equity firm,
oh, okay.
I think, a private equity firm. They come in and they snatch up these media things and then they suck them dry. And prior to, say, Out, because I know Out Magazine really came in for a lot of criticism, and Philip in particular. Philip is, like I said, young. He was this wunderkind. He's also really, really good looking and leads, on the surface, at least a glamorous life. So that's the kind of figure that people are just going to have their claws out for, and they're waiting for someone mm-hmm. like that to fail. Young, good-looking, really talented people. There's an enemy list a mile long. So there's been a lot of talk, first off, about the direction Philip took the magazine in, which was an extremely diverse direction, an intersectional direction, a very LGBTQ direction that promoted diversity of color as well as diversity of experience, which Traditionally, magazines like Out and The Advocate have always been criticized for centering the faces, voices, and experiences of fit white men under the age of 40. It was all about abs and what guys were hot and that sort of thing. It was all about cisgender white men who were young and had great bodies and partied all the time. Like, that was the image.
Right.
And Philip, I mean, I'm not going to say that Philip did this single-handedly. Queer media has been trending away from that image for at least the last 10 years, or at least that image has been
questioned. I think it's more the American publications than other publications, and we'll talk about that. Like, and I agree with everything you said, and I've read a lot of pieces about it that the Out magazine was actually criticized for having black people on the cover or for having transgender people.
Yeah.
Because the face of the magazine of those publications in general is the white, very fit, young guy. And you still see that out there. Like, you see, for example, DNA magazine or Attitude magazine in Europe.
The British ones.
They still have that. That's the image they have over and over again on the cover.
There's also a hard truth in media publishing here about who actually is going to spend their advertising dollars and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which is why these magazines, and it's why fashion magazines, it has been such a struggle to yank their focus away from white people. Because there's a thinking that those are the people that are going to spend money and all other groups aren't.
If I mean, not a very fair comparison to you.
No, it's not even an accurate one.
But if you compare to other magazines, for example, look at Vogue magazine or any other magazine, any fashion magazine, you know, it's mostly white people or celebrities. And we've talked to many, many fashion editors, and they all say the same thing, and they've always been saying the same thing, is that if it's not a celebrity, if it's not a size zero, or, you know, mostly white people on the cover, they don't sell as much as any other people they choose to put on the cover. So that's still an issue, and it's worse when you have a much smaller publication, like the queer ones. So it is a problem. All these issues plus the money situation. And it's just sad because you do want that type of representation out there. You know, we keep saying that things are changing, you know, and I hear that so much now. You know, why do we still talk about coming out and you know, having this conversation about representation since, you know, it's 2019. You know, it's fine to be gay. It's okay to be gay.
Oh, shut up.
So I still hear that a lot, especially on social media. I read that a lot. And no, that's not the case. So, you know, just I don't want to compare, but, you know, you have magazines like Essence magazine, and I'm happy that that type of magazine is out there because you do need that representation.
Can I bring up my point?
Yes.
When you brought that up pre-Mike, because he brought up Essence magazine and African-American media. And here is the essential problem with queer media as it currently stands in 2019. Our expectations of it might be unsustainable. Listen, I am not, let me put this on the table right now, I am not arguing for a less diverse queer media. I think the direction Philip took Out in was the correct direction to go. It is the 21st century. It is where the community is. See, it's how the community defines and sees itself now going forward. But you look at Essence as a perfect example. Of course, Essence magazine, any magazine, is not going to address the broad experiences of a vast array of people who all fall under a certain demographic. In other words, Essence magazine does not define black life. It is a magazine.
It's a segment of it.
It is a segment of black life. But the demographic is broad enough because Essence's demographic is largely black women. I don't think it's much of a men's magazine. That demographic is broad enough and cohesive enough that you can focus. And listen, African-American media faces a ton of issues as well. It's not like, I mean, I'm pretty sure Essence is struggling right now, too.
But they are.
Yeah.
And listen.
But listen, let me finish my point. Modern LGBTQ, and that's it right there, modern LGBTQ media, it's not gay media anymore. And it is expected to address and highlight and spotlight and center the voices and experience of a demographic that is extremely broad and diverse. From cisgender gay men to transgender women of color to non-binary teens to lesbians to transmasculine people to genderqueer people. It's supposed to address all of this. The experiences are so broad. And listen, in the writing of Legendary Children, I really came to a much more passionate belief and understanding that we do need to stand together as a community, LGBT mm-hmm. and Q. I am not arguing for a separation, but the reality of the situation is I'm not sure there's a media that exists that can cover all of, not just all those stripes of the rainbow, so to speak, all those queer existences, but also to pay special attention to people of color within the community because they have been marginalized for so long in our media. And that was largely what Philip had been trying to do for the last year right. in out, diversify the perspective of the magazine, who the editors were. There were many editors of color. There were many transgender editors, several of them. I know Travella Anderson was let go. Michael Street, who I don't know if Michael was let go or not. He is or was a senior editor at Out, and his he's actually in the acknowledgments at the end of our book because his work over the years writing for the modern ball community kept coming up in our research so much that we had to acknowledge him. Nobody, I don't think there's a journalist out there who was covering the modern ball community like Michael is. And I mean, I'm going on his social media response the other day. It sounded like he was let go too.
Yeah,
it was
a very I don't sad know response. For sure.
If not, I hope not. And if he was, like Philip, I think he's going to land on his feet. Philip already has a job as a grooming consultant on GQ, and he's too talented not to land somewhere else and to do greater things. But this is a sad moment, and I think there's going to be a lot of finger pointing and. Despite what I said about the impossibility of any queer media being able to sell itself to such a broad array of experiences, what Philip tried to do at Out was the correct thing to do. And I fear that if Out still exists a year from now, because there was some question about what they're doing going forward, that it will snap back to a more white, cisgender, celebrity-based and we'll see. We'll see if that's actually the more successful tactic. There are questions to be asked about what the future of queer media is. I don't think we can answer them. But people have been asking those questions for, like I said, 30 years.
Right. It's a difficult situation because you also have the fact that publications in general are dying because the younger generation don't buy magazines. Right. They read everything online on their phone.
And the online advertising model, believe us, we know this,
changes
is unsustainable.
Yes, yes.
The only reason Tilo does okay in this market is because we don't have a staff.
Because we don't
there
have a
staff. There is
nobody
to pay.
It's just the two of us and a tech a guy for the site to fix when something goes wrong with the site. But it's just the two of us. And that's why I'm same thing with the Fart Girls. I mean, the Fart Girls, it's
we've
just the two of
them. We've had discussions with the girls over the years about how
we
do we sustain ourselves and what's the best way to move forward in this market. And I remember the girls agreed with us that sites like ours, where the staff is just ridiculously low, is the only way that it works because there is not enough money in the advertising to pay all those writers. There's just not. I don't know if I mentioned that. I think I kept getting away from it. Philip got blamed a lot for the writers were not getting paid all year long.
And it wasn't
magazine.
His fault.
It seemed it clearly predated him. And a couple of times this year, there was rumors that he was quitting. I predicted to you 10 months mm-hmm. ago, I hate to say it, but I did say, I was like, I don't think Philip Picard is going to be in that job 2 years from now.
If you don't know, Prime Media apparently wasn't paying the freelance journalists. And they a ton of freelance journalists writing for Advocate and Out magazines and not getting paid. So that exploded on social media, which is not good for the magazines at all. So a lot of criticism about that. And I felt bad for Philip because he's in the middle of it. And he actually fought a lot to have these people paid.
He threatened to quit a couple of times, according to the rumors.
Yes.
And that may be why he quit. That's the other thing. We don't know. Were they let go? I mean, the fact that all these people left on the same day would suggest that nobody quit, that they were all let go. Which is why I think there's going to be finger pointing. And I think people are going to conflate not paying freelancers and the newly diverse outlook of the magazine mm-hmm. and claim that they are connected, but right. they are not connected. People are going to argue that Philip caused the magazine to plummet because he put black transgender
Which
women
is
on
not
the cover.
The case.
And that is not, that's part of the reason why we wanted to do this, because as observers of this whole thing, we just wanted to put it out there that people are going to say that, and that's not the reality of the situation.
No, I mean,
it's way more complicated.
Right. And it, what Philip did was the right thing to do, even if it's not the right approach at the moment for,
in it terms might not of, have been the most economically viable.
Right. But it was the right thing to do. This is how we are. This is right. what the queer community is right now. And it needed to be represented. I mean, if you look again, if you look at European magazines, gay European magazines, they're all white people, very fitted guys.
And I, you know, you have to ask the question here because nobody ever tried it before. How do you pitch a product to transgender women of color? And I'm not acting, I mean, I'm just asking because it's not a
right,
question
right.
anybody answered before. And when Out diversified its audience and really reached out to that group of people, how do you pitch that to advertisers?
Right.
Are advertisers going to be supportive of that?
Right.
These are complicated, complicated issues.
And you have to...
Philip's going to be blamed for things that right. I don't think had anything to do with him.
And... again, most of the time, the magazines with, as I said, white people, not very fitted, very fit people, muscular and all that. And if we're going to have to go back to that so that we sell more magazines, it's just tragic. It's just very, very bad.
I agree. I certainly won't be reading them.
And I hope that's not the case here, that we find some bit of ground somewhere, that we still have all colors, all representations on the cover of these magazines. And, you know, not rely on the European model that you see right now all the
right.
time.
And it may be the future of queer press that we
right.
go back to small outfits, small run outfits with small staffs that are, because that was the beginning of the queer media. They were all small. They were underground. If you really want a vibrant queer media, you may not want, you may have to turn towards the independent media, like, you know. I don't want to say us because we're not really writing about queer issues all that much, but there are people out there who are writing on their own sites or on Instagram or on social media that may be better sources for the individualized forms of queer media that we need.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're not going to solve this issue, but
no.
we did want to weigh in on it
right.
as independent queer media folks who have been consumers of the mainstream brand for decades.
Bottom line is we need that type of representation.
We
I
do.
Mean, to be honest, we do. I stopped buying magazines. I mean, I used to
We
have,
all did.
I used to have so many subscriptions. We used to get like 15 magazines a month, but now I don't have any magazines showing up at my door anymore, but I still read all the digital versions of them, and I hope we continue with them representing the queer community as it should in 2019.
Agreed. Thank you, Miss America.
yes.
God bless America.
Yes, now give me my crown.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we are diving into this week's Project Runway, which was Cats-themed, which means, of course, we're going to have opinions on that. We'll be right back.
Talking celebrities, pop culture, TV, and fashion. This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We are back on the Opinion Fest, and I was just talking to Lorenzo on what I laughingly call our break, which is really the 30 seconds in between the last time
I go out shopping.
I spoke into the microphone.
I go out shopping and then
I go back. I wasn't sure what he thought of this episode, and it turns out I don't think we're entirely on the same page,
no.
which is fun. It always makes for the more interesting
yes.
conversations. We're talking about the second episode of season 18 of Project Runway, which I don't even know what the title of it was, but it's the one where they had to do... They were inspired by the
movie
Cats.
They had to reimagine the world of cats.
Here's my issue with this. They opened it up with this, you know, basic product placement for cats, which is a long tradition in Project Runway. And hey, at least it wasn't yogurt. And I actually was like, oh, cats, okay. I freaking hate that play, and I have no intention of seeing that
Ooh.
Movie, but... That should be an interesting challenge because I thought they were going to ask them to do costumes for the film.
Mm-hmm.
Something inspired. But instead it was like this extended advertisement for the film and then, okay, use animal prints. That is the most uninspired challenge.
I'll tell you what the issue is with that is the fact that
every being manufactured.
Yes. I was hoping it was just going to be one instance or twice maybe throughout the entire season, but it looks like every single episode the winner is going to be manufacturer, the winner look.
Which means we're just looking at ready to wear every
week. Which is absolutely horrible, and I'll get to that. And that's why they couldn't do costumes or something like that, or you know, garments inspired by costumes or anything like that, because it had to be damn manufactured and look like a, I don't know, like a Macy's something.
Yeah. Lorenzo is spicy.
Anyway, so you know, I hate this. I absolutely hate it because it comes down to designing something very simple. I never forget watching documentaries about actually having stuff being manufactured, and I was amazed how many pieces sometimes these garments require.
And we've talked about this over the years. We've been friends or befriended several Project Runway designers over the years as they went through the manufacturing process. Several of them went through the QVC process, and we talked to Jay McCarroll about that. We talked to Emmett about that. We talked to Laura Bennett about that. Mm-hmm. We were kind of with Emmett and Laura through that process. And it was really eye-opening because they had to streamline so much of their design in order for it to be economically, financially viable.
Right. If you haven't watched yet, there is a great documentary with Jay McCarroll called 11 Minutes. And it's
dated now, but it is
good. It's very dated, but it has a portion of it when he goes has his stuff. He goes somewhere, I forget where, the garment district or whatever, to have his stuff made. And he's faced with the challenge of having to choose something else, or because some of his designs had 47 pieces or 50 whatever pieces.
Right.
And that would be insane, and it would cost a lot of money. That's why you see major designers designing things that cost so much money. That's one of the reasons, because things are so, they have so many pieces. It's not a simple pattern. That's what I'm trying to say here. And this is what they're looking for the show. And obviously, if you design something interesting, you're not going to win. You're just not going to win.
We'll see. I agree. Some of the more interesting designs got waved through this week.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to predict that that's just going to be the case every single week. It wasn't last season. They didn't manufacture every single one.
Well, that's the second time already, so we'll see.
Up to episodes, we'll see.
Anyway.
What I do know is that you love your new native deodorant.
Oh, my God, yes.
Lorenzo is singing its praises. And, of course, this portion of the podcast is being sponsored by Native. Take care of your body. It's the only place you have to live. At Native, they create safe, simple, effective products that people use in the bathroom every day. They create products with trusted ingredients and trusted performance. Not convinced? Check out the 9,000 five-star reviews from their customers. Native deodorant, which Lorenzo has been using and I have been using, I've been using it since the summer, is formulated without aluminum, parabens, and talc. It's filled with ingredients found in nature, such as coconut oil, shea butter, and tapioca starch. And they never test on animals.
Yes.
Big selling point for us. And there are free shipping and returns. And it works. Making the switch to an aluminum-free deodorant does not mean having to sacrifice on product performance. Lorenzo,
oh my God, they're
amazing. You've been using it for a couple weeks now, right?
Yes, you used it first, and you have always said they were great. And then I was like, all right, I should try. And then I did. I got the eucalyptus and mint, because I'm a mint queen, everything with mint in it, and the citrus and herbal musk. Those are the two. Yes, they're awesome.
They come in some, they also have coconut and vanilla, lavender and rose, and cucumber and mint, among others.
They're great. And what I love about them is that, A, they really work, and B, you're not overwhelmed with that deodorant smell, which I hate.
No.
I hate when your deodorant smell is fighting your actual cologne or perfume.
Right.
You know, that I just can't stand that.
And it smells like chemicals.
Right.
It smells like laundry detergent.
God, yes.
Right?
Yes. No, not Native. Native, you feel native.
It just feels natural. These are natural scents.
Natural, yes.
And you're right. They do. They blend well with other scents.
Yes,
they don't fight them or overwhelm. That's actually a really good point.
I know,
Lorenzo.
Because
you're
it is
so
true.
Smart.
When you take a shower and you put, you know, you use your deodorant and then that's all you smell. And then you get dressed and like, oh my God, that's all I smell. Now I'm going to put cologne and perfume and it's just going to, you know, I'm going to look like, I don't know, I'm going to smell like a...
That's because less is more with Native. Their formula contains simple ingredients you understand, so you know everything that's in their deodorant. Let's see, have I hit... I think we have hit all the major points. So, for 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com. That's N-A-T-I-V-E. DEODORANT.com, nativedeodorant.com, and use promo code TILO during checkout. That's 20% off your first purchase at nativedeodorant.com using promo code TILO. Thank you, Native. Okay, back to...
So first started, the episode started with a lot of drama with Daeyoung Kim having... I think she had a panic attack, right? It has to be
because she said her body shut down. Well, she actually did look really sick. I don't know what it was. I think it was stress and exhaustion. I'm not sure.
Overwhelmed
what it was.
I think the experience
just seemed to have overwhelmed her.
Yeah, you can tell that she's a little too hard on herself. That's the vibe I get, that she's very perfectionist, and then she was overwhelmed with the experience, trying very hard to do her best. And
shooting those shows is exhausting.
Oh my God! Yes.
Which is why you need to really shout out people like, I'm sorry, Nancy, is that her name? The 62-year-old on it. When older contestants are on these shows. And we sometimes joke about how every single time they're on camera, they mention their age and how old they are. Part of the reason is because they are being put through a ringer. And I'm sure they feel their age. They're in a room with like people who are in their 20s, and they're all doing like 14-hour days.
Right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Making the clothes and going through the whole thing every day. They get up early, very early, and they go to bed very late, and then they get up early again. The shooting itself, it's insane. I mean, we've done a couple of reality TV shows, and it was just one day, but even so, we were exhausted by the end of the day.
Yeah. We weren't in a competition.
Right, exactly. So it's a lot to handle, and I guess she wasn't prepared for it, but she got back, and... thankfully, she had time to design her garment.
Everyone rallied around her.
Yeah,
which was sweet.
So anyway, the episode was about cats. You know, of course, you know, I don't mind promoting a video and the show, and the movie clearly needs a lot of promotion because
it's
horrible.
Oh my God, that's going to be such
a flop. Oh my God, it's absolutely horrible.
I have always hated cats, but I really feel like, I love my cat. Well, that's part of the thing. And we talked about this. I remember I was talking to our friend David over the summer, who's a dancer, and I was talking about how...
David.
Two things. One was, we were at the Fire Island Dance Festival. That's why.
Yes,
that's why. And we were talking about dance, and I was talking about cats coming out, and I asked him what he thought of it, and I think he kind of rolled his eyes. I don't want to speak for him. But I was saying to him, I always thought it was so weird. Number one, the concept is sexy cats. Like, when you look at those dancers and all their sexy moves, it's sexy cats, which is, you know what? If you're a furry, fine. I'm not here to judge that. But
I'm glad you included that.
But that's not me, and that never was me, and the idea of sexy cats is just, not working for me.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I said was, I have lived with cats my whole life, or my whole adult life anyway, and I have never seen a moment of that play where I'm like, yes, that's what cats are all about. It's not about cats. It's not about actual cats.
Oh God.
And the characters don't look like, in the play at least, the characters don't look like cats. They don't act like cats. Their personalities aren't really like cats. They don't move like cats. I'm like, yeah, that's not, it doesn't get the essence of what a cat is all about.
Ooh, hate mail. I can see it coming.
I don't think so. I mean, whatever. If you like it, you like it. Listen, I'm not here claiming that it's too lowbrow or anything like that. That's not my issue with it. It's just, conceptually, I thought it was dumb. I always thought it was dumb. Never liked any of the songs. Any of them. Not one of them. Not even Memory. Kind of hate that song the most. Probably because it was covered so much. I'm really on a tangent now.
Oh my
God. We're talking about fashion.
Anyway, so they were supposed to reimagine the world of cats through animal print, which is great. I didn't think it was bad. You know, obviously it has to narrow down to one thing so they can manufacture it. And it's animal print. It's always trendy. Some seasons more than others, but animal print is always out there. People wear animal prints all the time. I personally do not like animal print. And I fear, I don't know, I don't have a problem with animal prints in general. I mean, some people look stunning, and I think it works more when you're very stylish, when you have a certain look, that's my take with animal prints. I don't think it works for everybody. That's just me.
Well, it can very easily go tacky.
Right. It can easily go tacky. But I also think that it has bad rap. I mean, animal prints in general. I mean, people always associate with tackiness. And you can see the design as kind of like, you know, ooh, I'd never do animal prints or whatever.
Right.
You get that a lot. And that's not how I feel about it. I just don't like it because I think animal prints is a little loud. And I don't like to be that loud when it comes to fashion. That's just me. But I can see wonderful looks. I can see people really working it. So anyway, I was happy with the challenge. You know, animal prints, let's see what they do. And it was kind of like reinventing the traditional animal print look. That's what they had to do.
They didn't reward anyone who tried to do that.
No, I mean, first of all, I was really annoyed that they never questioned, and that's, again, TV shows. Some of them weren't animal print. It was a feather print, which is not literally, it's not considered an animal print. Feather print.
I don't know. I mean, no, what's an animal print? If a feather, I mean, if fur, if a faux, you know, fur print, like the markings of a cat.
It's more like the skin of the animal that's called an animal print.
No, it's about the fur of the animal.
I guess.
Don't the feathers provide the same function?
I guess. And then the other one was the cat print.
Well, that I agree. She should have been called out for that.
Right. But they know. Of course not. And what I hate about, I mean, it's season 18, okay? Everything's been done and said and so on. Said and done. So, of course, the judges are going to they decide who's going to be top and bottom. And then it's like, all right, what can we say about the top? Positive things about the top, negative things about the bottom. It's all decided.
You're very cynical.
But that's the way it is. And if you get used to it, if you're fine with it, then you enjoy the show. Mm-hmm. But I was hoping for, again, because they have to manufacture the look, you know, it's very simple designs. Which I'm not happy about. Like, I was furious that...
Do you want to do the runway? You want to walk
through
the runway? Yes.
Yeah, that one person was safe and not top, but, it makes sense why she wasn't. Anyway, so we're going to run the zillion
looks.
First
off, first down the runway is Tyler. And by the way, there was a little bit of drama with Tyler because he thought what's-his-name was a total phony. Did you see that?
Oh, yes. I forgot about that.
And what is that guy's name?
Jeffrey? No, not Jeffrey. The other one, right?
The one who thinks so highly of himself. It'll come to me. But
yes, but
I want to say Sebastian. Is that it?
Yeah, I think so. Yes, I do like Tyler. I like his personality. He's very young.
You can tell very anal and uptight.
But you can tell that he can be creative.
I do agree with the judges when they said that this is not as fresh as you think it is. It actually looks a little dated.
It's a little costumey. I have to agree with Nina in a way. I do like the top a lot.
Yeah.
The
pants are terrible.
With the buttons and stuff. But the pants, he used the animal print for the bottom. And it just looked a little, I don't know. The proportions weren't right. And the look just looked a little too costumey, like Nina said. Anyway,
yeah.
Victoria,
it was a bit of a mess this week.
Victoria, it was everything but the kitchen thing. I mean,
I'm sorry, when you do that with white fabric, it looks like toilet paper, or she looks like a mummy. When you wrap someone like that.
Right.
There's a lot of interesting stuff going on here, but there's way too much of it.
There's too many elements, design elements. The fabric looks tortured, as we say. Mm-hmm. It's just too many things going on. The pleat and the cutouts and the long sleeve and the different patterns. And then if that wasn't enough, let me do a crazy bag on top of everything.
Which the bag didn't go with it at all.
Right. So it was just a little too much. And again, you look at it, that it's not going to be manufactured. So
yeah.
Next.
Next is Jeffrey, who also had a bit of a meltdown over this one. This was terrible, I thought. To me, it looked like exactly what it was. Someone who didn't know what the hell they were doing. Forget the yellow pants and the black boots. Well, I know that's impossible. They don't go with that poncho at all. And
right.
they clash so badly that you can barely see the poncho. The poncho itself isn't a bad idea, but he puts those weird bands around it. Those mm-hmm. Did not add anything to it.
I do like the poncho, but I wish it was just the only piece he had sent down the runway.
Put a pair of shorts on her or something.
Or nothing. I don't know. Just nothing. High heels and
yeah,
that's it. It would be a hot look. But the pants are horrible. They were poorly made. They just looked horrible.
Horrible. They, ugly
ill-fitted.
Color.
Ill-fitted. They didn't look good on her. Yeah, everything else just fell apart.
He's one of those, I think, who if he's not working within his narrow range, he just can't do it.
Right.
Next up is Brittany Allen. I have no idea who that is. Oh, there she is, the blonde.
Yes, she was safe, so she wasn't going to go anywhere.
It's over-designed as hell. The jacket's nice. Those straps hanging off it are just, come on. And
the straps are kind of like overwhelming. Too many looks, I think.
Mm-hmm. The top is ugly.
The top is ugly, over-designed. Everything looks over-designed, and I don't like the way she used the print.
I do like the jacket, though. It is a nice look. Next up is Alan, who, honestly, are you kidding me with this?
It's just...
It is so basic.
Yes.
It is, there's nothing to this. He, like, pinned the skirt up to make it look more interesting, but the outfit is... Who was it? I think it was Christian said she looked like Beyonce. In that instance, he wasn't paying him a compliment. It was like, well, this is kind of basic.
It's
not that Beyonce's basic, but she... I mean, her classic looks are basic, sexy pop star looks. Like, that's her look. Right. And that, you know, I don't even think this is that Beyonce.
It was just basic. Sometimes you see something coming down the runway and you're like, all right, this is basic. It might as well just wreck her.
Yeah.
It looks like something you see at any store.
Discount clothing store.
Yes, yes. It's just, no, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of which, what is his name? Shavi?
Shavi, yes.
That is so off the rack, and it doesn't look like an animal print. I don't even think it is. Well, I guess it's technically a zebra print.
Well, if feather prints are an animal print, this is an animal print.
That's not really a zebra print. It's just a stripe. Well, no, I guess it is.
I do like the look. It's basic, but I like the way
he... It is so Forever 21 to me.
Oh,
isn't it?
Oh my God. All right, I guess I can't say anything positive about that anymore after that, Kermit.
You're free to say whatever you want.
I like the placement of the pattern. How about that? It does look interesting.
Okay, but the shape of the dress is so basic, it's ridiculous.
I agree. It's a very basic
dress. It looks like the dresses they used to wear on that show, Revenge. You know, yes. Super bodycon 2011
girl, yes.
Dresses, you know?
Oh, my God, yes.
Okay, next up is Melanie. I'll say it right now.
Well, first of all, she had the cat print. Let's not forget
that. Yeah, that is bad. I don't think this is a bad design. I think it is very bad for her model. I do not think she had any consideration for her model's shape and size.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, her model has fairly squared-off shoulders, and she gave her, like, the absolute worst neckline for that kind of...
Isn't she the one who loves... Yeah, she likes sleeves, yes. I remember that. Yeah.
So, it's not a terrible design, but it's so ill-suited to the model, and she did not use an animal print. And, I mean, to be fair, there's a lot of shit hanging off this girl. Like, come on.
They
just want to go up
like
with a pair of scissors.
Asymmetric everything. This group, they do love that. Lots of straps hanging and
I guess because it's a shortcut to making it something look...
Right.
If you just had a plain blouse... Blouse, right. It's just a blouse. If it's like 20 extra yards of fabric hanging off it, it's fashion.
Yes.
Okay, next up is Delvin.
Yes.
Wildly overpraised.
Oh my God. The judges went on and on and on about that. And all I could see was like a dollar store Gucci look.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought dollar store Versace, actually.
Oh my, well, yeah, combination. You're right. Yes.
The
Versace
tropical?
And Gucci, because that's a Gucci belt. Like,
that is a Gucci belt.
Yeah, that's a totally ripoff.
The
knockoff,
lapel
I mean.
Is interesting. He's got a contrasting double lapel on the right side. It is the only interesting thing about the look. Everything else is fabric choice and belt.
Which
he didn't make.
The belt is hideous, and it looks like a Gucci knockoff. And they went on and on and on about this.
Because it would have been easy to manufacture.
Right.
So it's not a bad garment. It's not a bad looking garment, but it is as basic and ready to wear. It's just an interesting print. That's it. I loved this look.
It's Chelsea.
Chelsea's look.
Yes.
She's the only one who I think understood what a street look is supposed to look like. It's supposed to look like something you would see on the street. It was just a fun way of freshening up an animal print and not being a cliche about
it. The model really worked it. I mean, she looked amazing. She walked beautifully and paired with the sneakers. Mm-hmm. And the whole look was just great.
It was.
The cap and everything. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
It had real personality to it. And it, in the immortal words of Michael Kors, you knew who this woman was and where she was
going. Right, exactly. And you want to follow her and go with her wherever she's going.
Right. Yeah. Next up is Veronica in the losing look
of
the night.
God, Veronica, yeah.
I didn't mind the bloomers at all.
First of all, her attitude throughout the entire episode, like she's beyond and above everybody else. You know, it was just like, I couldn't stand it. And I'll stop there.
All right.
But her attitude towards animal prints and towards everything was just like getting on my nerves. Anyway, so, and then again, I mean, seriously, bloomers. I mean,
They're not on trend at all.
They're not on trend.
I mean, they're like 7-8 years ago.
And if you're making them, I mean, do a better job. These look like diapers.
But
like,
I had less of a problem with the bloomers than I did with that top, which was just ugly go with it at all.
Right, right.
But I'm fine with her going home. Are you?
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I never had any problems. Sergio, that's his name.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't think they were going to send her home. I thought they were going to send the other guy.
Okay, Sergio's garment was freaking hideous.
Oh,
and
my God.
What kitchen curtain monstrosity is that? What the frig
First
is
of
that?
All, it's
whorehouse
so,
curtains.
It's the design is so dated and ugly.
Unbelievably dated. And he talks about the mature women don't dress like this.
This is like Little Women for a high school play.
Yeah, nobody dresses like
horrible,
this.
Horrible, horrible, horrible. Horrible design.
With the train?
Yes, yes.
And it's supposed to be streetwear? He should have gone home.
Streetwear where?
I know.
The train. The
ugly brown trim, which is so crafty looking.
Absolutely
Nothing about
hideous.
This said fashion.
I can't believe he was safe.
No. It looks like the kind of thing you see on a mannequin in a fabric store. You know, sale on animal prints.
Oh, my God.
Doesn't it? Like, where they just pin a bunch of shit onto a mannequin?
Oh, my God.
Am I wrong?
No, you're not.
I am totally right.
So, Dae Young.
So, I'm thinking this is a take on a hanbok, the Korean dress with the high waist and the long back.
It's not bad, but she just didn't have time to make it look more
she
polished.
She clearly had an interesting idea, though. And the fact that she executed that in a day, whatever. Okay, waver through. Whatever.
Yeah,
no one seemed to think it was unfair.
No. Marquise, I guess.
Yes, Marquise. I actually liked Chelsea's look more than his, and I would have given the win to her.
I agree.
But he did it. That is a street look. That is utilizing animal print in a different way. All right. It's on trend. Those shorts with the big flounce on them are very on trend.
He designed something that was going to win, and I went to the Bravo site, and you can see his design manufacturer, and it looked exactly like what he sent down the runway. So win-win.
He knew what he was doing.
He knew exactly what he was doing, and it's not a bad look. It's a great. I'm not crazy about the short skirt thing,
but it is a thing.
But it is a thing
that's going on in fashion,
right?
Now.
And the top was interesting. So when they said he was the winner, I knew it. All right.
Next up is Nancy, who did that shredded hoodie, which kind of liked the hoodie.
Nancy, I love this so much.
I didn't like the skirt at all.
I love everything about it. It's so fashion. It's so everything.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Everything is gorgeous.
The hood is gorgeous.
The hood is gorgeous. The skirt is beautiful. Everything. I love everything about it. And but again, they had to can you imagine manufacturing that?
No, you
that
couldn't
top?
Manufacture
no.
either one of those
no,
things.
No, absolutely not. But it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's so fashion. My God, it's fashion, fashion, fashion.
She really has a level of talent above most of the other ones, I
guess,
think.
When I saw that look. I mean, the top especially.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. She shredded the fabric, and it looks like this deconstructed.
But deconstructed fashion is not on trend right now.
I understand all that, but it looked beautiful. It looked like fashion. When you see all that mall clothes going, you know.
Yeah, it's Project Mall clothes this
year. I know, and then you see fashion, you're like, whoa, okay, I'm up, okay. You appreciate it,
right.
But you knew. Anyway, I think that, by the way, Jeff is kind of cute. I like his look. Anyway.
Because he's half naked through almost every episode. All right. So I believe that is it for the week then.
So so it wasn't a bad episode. I thought the challenge was great, kind of great. I'm happy. I'm fine with the winner. Especially the one Alft, no longer Alft.
No, we don't say that
I
anymore.
Know. We don't say Alft
Eliminated.
Is anymore.
Clossed. Clossed off the list.
I know. And by the way, I've read a lot of stuff about Karlie Kloss not being very friendly or warm on camera. And, you know, I'm beginning to agree with most people. Like,
you know, it's funny. I thought that this episode, I was like, you're really losing
me. Like, she came out and she was talking about, well, Dae Young is blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, I hope she's okay, but let's move on. Yeah. Let's move on to the challenge.
She wasn't as it was just like, whoa, smooth as she had been.
No. It was a little... Now I can understand what I read online. Yeah.
Anyway, this is our thoughts for the week.
Yes.
All in Sundry, and we will be back next week with more thoughts on whatever crosses our desks. Until then, I hope you all have a lovely one. We thank you for your support, and we love you all. Bye-bye.
Bye.